Call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum at this time, but we're going to get started anyway. Representative, we will remind everybody that this is actually the Agriculture Policy Committee. Policy is needing some additional days in order to get their work done. So with that, Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill to get it before us? Can we do that? Or let's start taking testimony. We don't have a quorum to move it. So if you'd like to start explaining the bill and bring up your testifiers. And then once we have a quorum, I'll stop and then officially call us to order. So Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, this morning. And we're going to be looking first. I have a couple of bills that are similar in intent. First one we'll take up would be House File 880. And it has to do with some loan forgiveness for teachers that take up ag education. It calls for up to a five-year period, $3,000 per year of loan forgiveness for teachers who would enter the field of ag education. And the reason for these bills is we've heard a lot of talk about the shortage of ag educators on the high school and even the college level. And this is an attempt to encourage folks that if they go into ag education and then are enticed by private industry with the higher paying job offer, it would maybe incent some, hopefully it would, to stay in ag education. So again, the bill simply allows it for a five-year period up to $3,000 per year in loan forgiveness for anybody that goes into ag education in a high school situation. And I have a couple of testifiers, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Please, to the testifier, if you state your name, who you represent, and begin, please.
Hi. My name is TJ Brown. I'm a high school teacher in Springfield, Minnesota. As was said, the ag ed teacher shortage is greatly impacting our profession and the state. Some of the reasons for the shortage is in recent years, for much of greater Minnesota, our teaching profession has been a terrific asset for our schools with new legislation related to science components and other being shortages in other current technical areas where ag ed crosses over into the food and also into the mechanic side of things. We're able to provide a lot to our small schools and that we have such a diverse offering, so that's very attractive to our rural schools that can't afford to keep as many teachers on a payroll. So we're able to fulfill that need, which has created a bit of the shortage because many places are adding. For example, last year there was an increase of at least six FTEs in our state, but probably could have been upwards to double that. This year the problem will be that much, if not more. So,
excuse me, Mr. Brown, we do have a quorum, so I wanted to officially call us to order. Okay, don't mean to interrupt. And Chair Anderson, you want to move your bill to put it before us?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 880 be referred to the Committee of Higher Education and Policy Finance.
Thank you. We do now have the bill before us, so thank you. Mr. Brown, please continue.
You bet. And as was mentioned earlier, so the shortage piece is augmented by the fact that our graduates in the pipeline are being attracted away by higher dollar industry jobs, mostly because when they graduate they have an extreme amount of student debt. So in a way this would try to equal that playing field to give those kids the opportunity to take a look at sticking with their major and offering a great deal to our students in greater Minnesota by keeping them in their teaching field and satisfy some of the shortage areas. So this has been done in other states. The ones I know of, South Dakota, Nebraska, California, are all doing similar plans to this to try to keep those students in the teaching field instead of being attracted away by industry so that they can do as much good for students as possible. So any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any questions for the testifiers, members? Any questions? Seeing none, tell everybody back home that I said hello. So I will brag here a little bit. Mr. Brown is from Mountain Lake.
Yep.
Yeah, so welcome to St. Paul. So Chair Anderson, do you have any other testifiers on this bill?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair.
All right, Any other questions for Chair Anderson about this bill? Any members? No? Seeing none, well, Chair Anderson renews his motion that House File 880 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Chair Anderson. I think you want to move into the next bill. Is that correct? House File 879. Is that where you'd like to go?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 879 to put it before the committee.
All right. And is this one being held over, Chair Anderson, for possible inclusion?
I believe it would be.
All right. So the bill is before us. It'll be held over for possible inclusion. To the bill, Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. The other aspect we've heard about when talking about the difficulty in attracting and keeping ag ed teachers is the fact that most all of them put in a lot of extra time doing summertime work, especially in the area of FFA, a lot of summertime projects and such. And these teachers put in a lot of extra time. And there used to be more extended contracts, but as schools faced budget situations, those things kind of got smaller or dried up altogether. And this bill is an attempt to encourage schools to again offer some type of summertime contracts. And the idea I came up with was kind of a one-to-one match from the state to the local district, that for every day that the local school would pay a summertime teacher to work in this area, the state would match that on a one-to-one basis up to a total of 30 days. So if the local district would have an additional 15 days, the state would match that for a total of 30 days on a summertime extended contract for that teacher. So, Mr. Chair, again, that's what this program would do. And again, I have one testifier, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. To the testifier, if you please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Good. Chair Hamilton, I appreciate your taking the opportunity to allow me here. My name is Tom Apple, agriculture education teacher at Mountain Lake Public Schools, currently completing my 36th year of teaching there.
Welcome.
I've asked to testify today in terms of summer contracts and extended contracts. One of the reasons before you is a little bit of my longevity and perhaps provide a little bit of history in terms of where summer education programs in agriculture along with extended contracts have been. When I first came into the teaching profession, a number of our school districts offered what we refer to as a 12-ninths contract. And the bottom line is a 9-month contract was 3 months in addition to the base 9-month contract. If some of you recall, we went through the 80s and a little bit in the early 90s, and funding became an issue, so a lot of districts took away those educational opportunities for our agriculture education students. One of the things I want to review with you today is why that's needed for our students, our FFA members, our agricultural industry, to provide opportunities for those students. I myself am still on an 11-ninths contract, basically a 40-day contract. And down the road, that's one thing that maybe the committee should consider, is 30 enough or not? I mean, eventually you're going to discuss some of those things, I suspect. But one of the things that we've always done in Mount Lake is an educational tour. We take 3 or 4 days, and we actually go visit different business and industries in agriculture. So whether it's a tour to Chicago or to Kansas City or Milwaukee or wherever it is, visiting businesses that are specific to agriculture. The summertime is certainly an opportunity to do that. The one thing that you really should try to keep in mind is that agriculture is very seasonal in nature. There's no better educational time for agriculture than in the summertime when we have crops and livestock growing. Obviously, a number of the committee members are familiar with the county fairs and the state fairs. One of the things that goes ahead and happens is a lot of our programs and our teachers are very active with those particular activities, using a lot of time. Another component that we deal with specifically is the community service aspect. I'm assuming a number of you are hopefully familiar with the trends in the last 5 years of school gardens, farm-to-school programs, where we have agriculture programs growing food that actually go into the different programs in the state of Minnesota, lunchrooms. And then, of course, another component is the leadership development. So the bottom line is we have lots and lots of things that should be accomplished in our programs because of the seasonal nature. But what has historically happened over the last, essentially, 3 decades, those extended contracts and summer contracts have been whittled away for budgetary reasons. The bottom line is it's really a lack of opportunity for our students.
So, Commissioner, yes, Commissioner Apple, you at the Mountain Lake School District. Well, first of all, full disclosure, Mr. Apple, well, Commissioner as well, taught my children in school as well, and he was one of their favorite by far, both my children. And did you also teach the first testifier, Mr. Brown?
Yes, Mr. T.J. Brown was one of my first students, so we have a little bit of a tag team effort going on here this morning.
So Mr. Apple has done a tremendous amount of good for education and also for agriculture. Could you also tell us a little bit more about what you've done within the Mountain Lake School District as it pertains to agriculture, some of the classes and whatnot?
One of the things that we have occurred in the last 2 years, a number of you have heard about the shortage of agriculture educators, and certainly want to focus on agriculture education this morning, but I would be remiss if I didn't call to your attention that we have a shortage of basically all career and technical educators. So whether that becomes in the facts area, industrial tech area, a number of those areas also that where there are shortages of teachers. One of the trends that we're seeing in the state of Minnesota the last 5 to 6 years is the fact that we can't find other teachers. So given the diversity of an agricultural license, where you can actually go ahead and teach some science, you can teach some foods classes, you can go ahead and use some of the floriculture, horticulture elements, teach artistic elements in them. We have expanded in our program for the last 2 years and brought on two additional instructors at Mountain Lake. So we have a three-person department. And that's not just Mountain Lake. In southwest Minnesota, Martin County West and Jackson were a couple of first schools that started that trend. This year I just looked at the teacher shortage. It ties a little bit back to your previous bill. Right now, St. James, Cedar Mountain, Marshall, Windham, RTR, Russell Tyler Ruthven, along with potentially my position, I'm at 36 years and considering a job change, a career change, I should say. So that trend actually is continuing. So the importance of all this legislation on both bills from the standpoint of improving and enhancing summer experiences along with loan forgiveness, it's kind of critical to our profession and to agriculture.
Thank you, Commissioner. And, you know, to the other members here, in all seriousness, Commissioner Apple is a wonderful resource. And so if your schools are looking for any additional ideas or innovative ideas, I'm sure that he'd be happy to visit with them.
I would.
Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, any final words on this bill, Chair Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I think Mr. Testifier done an excellent job of telling us why we should look at programs such as these. And yeah, the numbers could be open. I selected those to get kind of a modest beginning in a program, but understand the need is there and would hope that the committee could support moving ahead with these types of measures. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. So we will be holding over House File 879 for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 812, and Representative Bly, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move House File 812, and would this be going to taxes next? Is that?
We're going to lay it over.
Okay, thank you. Ask it to be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, so... This is a bill that tries to address helping young farmers get started in farming. And personally, I can remember as a teacher working in rural areas, working with young students who are working with high school students who really wanted to get into farming, but the thing that held them up the most was thinking about access to land. If they weren't a part of a farm family or were not likely to inherit land. So what this bill tries to do is add another tool to the toolbox to try to help make that possible. I think this is a bill that has come before the legislature before. I think even Representative Hamilton may have carried a rendition of it in the past. So I think Representative Hamilton, even though we might differ on some things, I think we both share a love of farming. And even though I haven't been able to work in that area, I admire farmers and really want to see that continue. And that's just something I wanted to add. But anyway, this particular policy is modeled after a Nebraska policy, which has proved to be very successful. And there are a lot of farmers who look at their land as kind of their retirement plan, and going forward, they need to make sure that that's there for them later on. But a lot of them would like to try to see that a farmer could continue to farm the land that they were on, and sometimes economics makes that very difficult to do. So this is another way to try to help with that. And kind of the logistics of the bill is it creates a tax credit for owners of agricultural assets. And the details are pretty well explained in the handout that you've received. But it creates benefit for the person who's going to sell the land, as well also with some benefits to the future farmer or the future landowner, and asks them to really get involved in a farmer management program where they can learn some of the things. And I think that's a good part of this bill that encourages their understanding of what it means to be successful in farming and managing a farm. And I have with me Bobby King from Land Stewardship, who made me aware of this policy, and turn over comments to him.
Good morning, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Bobby King with the Land Stewardship Project. Land Stewardship Project has a beginning farmer program. We've operated for about 15 years. And it's a year-long course, and then after it you're mentored with a farmer. And some people are farming already and wanting to do something different, but many people are left the farm and want to return to farming, or they want to get into farming for the first time. And one of the biggest barriers is access to land. And last time we really pushed this bill, I think, was in 2006. In 2006, it was more about being able to afford land. Now it's even finding any land for sale. With the prices for commodities have been very high, which is good, but it's also meant larger established farmers have paid cash for land. And so even just being able to find land for sale is a real problem. And I think we all know that for vibrant rural communities, we need more people living in rural Minnesota, and we need more people farming in Minnesota. So this is a bill, is a state policy that says to landowners, helping beginning farmers get started is something we value, and we're going to give you an incentive to do it. And it will give the landowner a credit on their income tax for renting or selling land to a beginning farmer. And it really sends the signal, I think, both to beginning farmers and landowners that this is important and we value it in Minnesota. And like Representative Bly said, it's based off a program in Nebraska that's been going on since 1999. And I'll actually send the link to the homepage for their program, because they've really ramped it up lately. And the concept they're using to promote it to farmers and beginning farmers is they call it next gen. Who is the next generation of farmers, and how are you as a landowner? What's your vision for who's going to take over your farm and farm your land, and to ask you to consider to pay it forward and help someone get started? So I don't think we really have any state policy that effectively addresses this critical issue of access to land, and I think this would be a good step in that direction. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mr. King. We'll hold our questions until all the testifiers have been down here. Mr. Peterson is going to come down. I think this is an appropriate bill. The last I saw, I think the average age of farmers was about 59 years old, so it's a situation that a lot of changes are going to be coming in the next 5 to 10 years. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and you stole my opening statement. It was the average age of a farmer is 58 years old, and they do an ag census every couple of years, and it's been creeping up since I've been with Farmers Union from 54 to 56 to 58. We can see the trend. You know, the other interesting number, though, is the other number I saw is that only 6% of farmers are under 35 years of age, and so I think that's always interesting too. So, as Representative Bly said, Farmers Union, we've been supportive of trying to look at beginning farmer programs and what's out there, what's available, because we get asked that a lot. What are we doing as a state policy? Are we doing anything to encourage young farmers, bring people in? And so I think this bill gets at that. We've worked on this for a few years. Mr. King, they mentioned Nebraska. Iowa, I think, also passed in 2007. Theirs, I think, is just for renting land, but it's, we hear from farmers in Iowa that it's been very successful there. And again, this is a different idea, too, where it's really getting at people who don't have an entry into farming, even like I did, where my parents, kind of helped me get started. This bill, it goes a little different way in helping that. So appreciate your consideration. We think it's a good bill.
Anybody in the on the committee have questions for either of our two testifiers? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is for the author. I'm curious how you define a beginning farmer. I see it here now.
Okay.
Anybody under 58, probably.
Yeah. I think, actually, I'm not sure that age necessarily would be the defining factor. Beginning farmers include women who have had a previous career and are retiring and decide they want to work the land, and they may be small farms, but I think a beginning farmer has more to do with this is something you haven't done before, and you need access to land to make it happen, and so it could be younger, it could be middle-aged, it could even be someone who's older. So
I was trying to think where it was in the bill, but one suggestion I have for this bill as we look at it, that we perhaps line it up, because Department of Ag has programs through the Rural Finance Authority where I believe they define beginning farmer, and then also the USDA and the Farm Bill has beginning farm programs, and I think it would be helpful to line it up with that, so that's a good comment.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, originally in the bill we used the federal definition, which I think is hasn't been farming more than 5 of the last 15 years, and because people get in, they get out, they're trying. We thought that was good. The version of the bill here says you haven't been farming in the last 2 years. We did that to appease some people, some members of the tax committee when we were trying to get it passed, and we would favor actually using the federal definition, which I think is more real world. And that's the definition they use in Nebraska too.
Okay, something you may want to work on. Representative Johnson, are you okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at risk of being too random here, I just want to share that a concern that's been expressed to me by farmers who are talking about passing along the farm and the advanced age at which they actually pass along the farm. And I'm hopeful at some point we can look at that as well. I had a farmer in my office the other day where he anticipates actually being able to pass along his farm to his son, who's actively involved in the farming, when his son is age 60. And so, it's somewhat comical, but it shows that some of the challenges we have with, yeah, I'm sure, tax policy and a whole lot of stuff. And I think I can see where that'd be frustrating. And I don't want to get too off subject, but that's something that interests me as well.
Anybody in the audience who would care to testify either for or against the bill? Any other questions from members? If not, Representative Bly, any closing comments?
I just think this is a need that we have to meet some way, and this is one tool in the toolbox that might address that. So thank you for your time, and I renew my motion to laid over.
Thank you, Representative Bly. House File 812 is laid over. We're going to make a switch in the agenda now, and part of the reason for laying these bills over is we have a couple of bills that are pretty similar. Representative Marquardt has some of the same types of things, and Representative Poppe's also has some of those same aspects. So we'll hear those three bills and then hopefully try to take the best things of each bill and incorporate those into a policy bill that we may have. So we'll move along to House File 1074, next bill. Representative Marquardt, would you like to move your bill?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1074 for to lay it over for possible inclusion.
Okay. And to your bill, Representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. This is very similar to Representative Wise with some differences. And I certainly don't have to tell this committee the importance of agriculture being the foundation of our economy. 15% of our total workforce is either through the ag or food industry. 20% of our state's exports, agriculture, it's significant. And when you go into rural Minnesota, it's about 40% of the economy. So it's huge to rural Minnesota and communities. And we've heard some statistics on the age and so forth. I really think this is a huge issue that could have some real impacts on our economy into the future is the fact that we have a lot of farmers that want to retire, but they necessarily, if they don't have a son or daughter to pass that on to, and then you also have the inexperienced beginning farmer who doesn't know for sure how to get into the industry and then how to be successful at that. And Mr. Peterson and the chair was mentioning the average age of 58 or 59. I went into the USDA census from 2012, and for about the 76,000 farms in Minnesota, about 52% of them, the farmer or the operator, that's his main occupation. Only 52% farming is the main occupation of the operator. And of those, 31% are 65 years of age or older, and 29% are 55 to 64. So 60% of those farms where farming is the main occupation of the operator, 60% 55 or older. And I think that really talks to the concern and the problem that you have on basically answering the question, who is going to be farming for the next generation? That's kind of the question here. And so kind of, I won't repeat what Representative Bly said, but it does a lot of the same things. Is how can you provide some incentives for a farmer who wants to rent or sell the agricultural land and assets? And then what are some things for the beginning farmer to assure that they're going to have some good advice, some good help to help them manage the business? So I'll just go over the five main parts. A few are different. There's part one, there's a $500,000 to Agri, that would be for need-based scholarships for farm business management. And this would not be just for beginning farmers. This would be for anyone. And then it extends Agri for another 10 years from 2015 to 2025. And then, similar to Representative Bly's bill, it provides tax credits to the owner for selling or renting the land. It provides tax credits a little different than Representative Bly in that it would do a tax credit up to 100% of the cost for the farm business management or to $700. I think Representative Bly was $500. And we had heard in testimony earlier in the year that the kind of the average cost for farm business management to a farmer was about $1,700 a year. So this would cover some of those costs. And then something else a little different, it would provide some matching funds for the FAME program that sets up savings accounts through community action agencies, sets up saving accounts so that if you want it for low-income folks to help launch businesses. So it would be matched up to $3,500 over 2 years. And then the final part of this would be an appropriation of $2.4 million a year, $4.8 million over the biennium, to the commissioner to provide grants to MNSCU for the Farm Business Management Program, with specific language that says before this was ever done, it had to be certified that MNSCU was going to use these funds to not to supplant but supplement and to make sure that it's additional dollars, that they're not somehow using these dollars somewhere else. It has to be new dollars. They have to spend what they are before and then spend these new, and then also provide a certain percentage to certain groups and so forth. So that's the bill. I think it addresses what Representative Bly is also trying to do, but we do have a concern here on kind of the, you know, looking at the next generation of who's going to be farming. So
yeah, you raised some very very interesting and concerning points about the aging population of those involved in production agriculture. And I also like that you are taking a pretty encompassing approach at this with the education part of it and accounting help, things like that, to help the younger farmers to kind of get established and learn how to operate a business successfully. So I like those parts. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Anderson and Representative Marquardt and Representative Blyford, bringing this issue forward today. And I guess it's towards the end of the week. I'm a little reflective. And I was thinking, you know, when you talked about the numbers, the ages of, and the fact that folks are working other jobs and that sort of thing, and I started looking at that. I believe you said it was close to 60% are in this age group that they're getting older. You know, this is a challenge and all of that, but it's also an opportunity. I read the other day, I believe we lost 400 farms last year. And we talk a lot of, we know that farms are increasing in concentration, but we hear about the need and the interest, and I think of the gentleman that was here from Rice County, who we honored, the Hispanic guy, and we know that the Rural Policy Development Group has really looked at immigrants getting into farming, and so there's a lot of stuff happening here. I hope that we can really see this as an opportunity to kind of break that trend of increasing fewer farmers on the land and actually seeing opportunity for more farmers. And I would hope that, I guess I'm just wanting to speak strongly in favor of both of these approaches, and we need to figure out which is best, but let's take advantage of that opportunity and our changing demographics and see if we can't next year or 3 years down the road see, instead of a decline of 400 farmers, let's see an increase of 400 farmers and revitalize those rural communities that we chat about. And so anyway, that's my reflection for the day. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one area that I'm looking at here at the very tail end in Section 7, we list a whole group of folks that we want to make sure that MNSCU would allocate a portion of their grant funding for services. And what I don't see here is any mention of our veterans. And the reason I raise that question, I'm going off the general summary, very, very last page, Section 7. And the reason I raise that question, is there a reason why we don't list vets in there? Because there are other bills rolling around that are trying to address the same thing. And it just is is there a reason why they're not there, and shouldn't they be there?
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick. That's a great question. And I was just merely on this one taking what's in Chapter 43A-0.02, but that is covered. But that's an excellent. I mean, I don't think there's any reason. I don't know why they're not already included in that. Certainly would be amenable to doing that.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt, and Representative Bly, and Representative Poppy, thank you for bringing these bills forward. One of the concerns that I think all of us have is the agri-funds and targeting the agri-funds to use those for other things, even though that this is a great, great idea. Have we talked with the department as far as in the event we shift away the agri-funds to some of these other projects, what does that mean? Will that be creating some holes or taken away from other programs?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, Chair Hamilton, I haven't talked to the department about this. And what I know, and you certainly know about these funds more than I do, I mean, it's really looking into the future, the biofuels and all these type of things that already kind of the next gen type is kind of one of the main purposes of the program, and to me this falls under that because it's really looking at the future with beginning farmers and so forth. But I have not talked to the department. I think it certainly would fall within what I know of the program, of the goals of the program, and how the department would feel about that. I don't know for sure.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, and Representative Marquardt, I want to work with you on this as well, and this is one of the reasons why we all have our work cut out for us. We're looking for some additional dollars for the ag budget so that we can focus on some of these very great endeavors, if you will. And a lot of times what we end up doing within the agriculture, from my experiences over the course of time, we almost pit one against the other, if you will, because we want to do, you know, all these great programs, you know, and just looking for some additional dollars. We have our, and I'm raising my hand here, we have our work cut out for us so that we can do some great things for agriculture. So thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Chair Hamilton raises a good point, and we have the Department of Ag here. If you would care to comment on the possible use of agri funds for a program such as this.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Santo Cruz, MDA. First, I think it's important to say what needs to be said, and that is this. These are good ideas. Farm business management isn't, we don't see that as a nice to have. We see that as another need to have for our farmers and producers across the land. And farm business management is a service, as you've heard through this committee and through Chair Hamilton's committee, a crisis. It's in crisis mode, and we are aware of that, and that's why through the AgriFund currently, I believe we've put out, I can get you accurate numbers, but about 250 scholarships towards farm business management training and or credits. Our program is currently not need based, and that is because we see it in crisis mode. We need more farm business management writ large, not necessarily just people who are in need based, because we're looking to meet the needs and to meet the demand. So our intention through the AgriFund is to continue to grow the portion of money that goes towards farm business management commensurate with the demand. And maybe I could just say one other thing about what Chair Hamilton had mentioned, and I deeply appreciate it because it's so true. One of the real keys to Agri's success is its flexibility. And I'll give you an example that will be near and dear to Representative Lewick's heart. The funds match the different programming as we see the state change and need. I think this committee is well aware of the need for more livestock in the state. The economic activity it brings to outstate Minnesota, the amount of opportunities it does to create and stabilize small towns, to keep people in farming and on the land. And so that is currently the largest recipient of the AGRA funds, is the Livestock Investment Program. We do have New and Beginning Farming. We have a number of different programs that we've tweaked, replaced, changed throughout time. And it's that flexibility to how the changing landscape of agriculture comes to us that we respond to it. Farm business management is part of that. As I mentioned earlier, it's in crisis mode. It's something that we're going to respond to. The only concern we would have is if the $500,000 is earmarked, so to speak, for farm business management, that could do one of two things that would be unintended. One may be there may not be the demand there for the $500,000. In which case that money would be held up and not be going to things like livestock investment grants. The other thing that could happen is it could create exactly this effect that Chair Hamilton talks about, where someone says, well, we've got now $500,000 marked for this. That maybe mean less for that. And then, you know, another representative says, well, I need to make sure that I put sideboards around what's happening in livestock or something like that. And eventually what ends up happening is we lose our flexibility to respond to the needs in real time. And so for that reason, I would just make those comments. But I am not critical of this bill. The department doesn't have a position on it currently. I think these are great ideas, and they correctly identify real issues that need to be addressed.
One quick question. You mentioned the scholarships you award. What are they based on?
Currently it's based upon if they have the proper number of credits. So if they've enrolled in the right number of credits, then they would qualify for the scholarship up to a certain level, and I could get more details. I think the overall amount that's gone out of the fund is somewhere around $300,000, but again, I could get I could get accurate numbers for the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kruger. Follow-up, Representative Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. And, you know, this is Representative Mark. Well, this is for everybody, and I'm simply going to say, and Mr. Cruz, to you as well, I'm going to need some help. We need some help. We need the governor's support, the Senate's support, of course, the Department of Agriculture, if you could talk to your leaders, and, of course, we're talking to ours, because we are asking for some additional dollars to come into the agriculture budget. And, you know, quite frankly, I need some help. We have a lot of great initiatives. I know working very closely with the various commodity groups and whatnot, bringing forth some of their proposals, which will have, in my personal opinion, I think I would have support here. This would have some great benefits for the Minnesota economy as well. And in order to do this, we are going to have some additional dollars coming into to our budget. So I guess, you know, no shame whatsoever. I'm simply asking for help from everybody in this room and beyond. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I'll just start by saying thank you, Representative Hamilton, for taking the lead and really being out front and seeking additional dollars for ag. In this session, I'm impressed, and I'm on your side. I'll work with you on that. I wanted to pick up on Representative Lewick's comments about the veterans, and I just wanted to point you to a bill that has been moving through. It's called Bets to Ag, and it's the idea is to provide some training, more direct training for access to work in agriculture, and it can be actually on the farm or in services or processing or whatever. It's House File 545. It's moved from the Ag Committee to the Higher Ed Committee, and I guess I'm asking for your support on that as well. And I think it does target. And I think your point was very apt. We know that there's a lot of veterans who are from the countryside and come off the farm, and I think, and we also know there's a demand for workers in agriculture. And again, that's another opportunity we have. Let's take advantage of these opportunities. This is an important session for this. Thank you.
Anybody in the audience who'd like to testify on Representative Mark Bart's bill? If not, any final comments, Representative?
Mr. Chair and Committee, just thank you so much for taking some time to talk about this important issue. Thank you.
Okay, House File 1074 is laid over for possible inclusion. Last bill on the agenda for today is House File 1051, I believe. Is that the right number? And Representative Poppy, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move my bill for possible inclusion, or it does have some financial impact, so I don't know if it ever will go to the Finance Committee or how that's going to work. But
okay. We'll just put it before the committee.
But I want to be able to talk about it, and I'm excited to be here. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, we have a handout here, and I'm just going to set the table here a little bit. So I appreciate that I'm going to take some, hopefully be able to use some of the committee's time. But when I'm not here in session, I work at Riverland Community College. I'm a college counselor, and I meet with students who many times are undecided about what they want to do in their future. So I'm giving you a handout here to kind of work through a little bit about a kind of a career process theory. And this is actually not anyone else's theory but my own. But I think it kind of fits. I very much appreciate hearing from TJ today, because I've been able to serve on the MALC board with him and with others who are in the trenches, talking to students and educating students on a regular basis. So this really kind of comes from my own involvement with MALC, my own work that I do as a college counselor. But just to kind of walk you through, and then I will be able to talk about the bill. But I just wanted to be able to share how I think we are best served if we can help students to have more exposure to ag education and agriculture. And so this actually starts with awareness. So if you have the little sheet in front of you, it's the side that talks about awareness. And for the most part, people don't go into jobs or careers if they are not aware of what that job is. for all of us as we sit around the table, we're doing things either in our lives outside of here or the life here because we had some awareness that this job existed. It would be rare to think that somebody actually goes into something that they've never, ever, ever heard of. They might eventually segue into something because they were working in a place and now a job is created or whatever, but they don't necessarily initially start out that way. So you have to have a basic awareness. And when we have a basic awareness, I think we will offer the opportunity to consider more career options. And so if you kind of have an awareness, you have a hearing kind of process, you kind of have a first understanding. But then the next piece is the exposure. So if awareness is kind of the first area, the exposure adds some depth to that. And when you have some depth, you can get that maybe in two ways. So you go from awareness of hearing about something to knowing a little bit more about it, and that exposure comes through education and experience. So education, certainly TJ is a great example of that. If you have somebody who is able to teach you, educate you, inform you, enlighten you, but it's still somewhat of a passive experience, maybe. For some students, if you're taking a history class, it might be different from taking a welding class, obviously. So you might be learning about something, but you might not be necessarily actively engaged yourself. It's a cognitive awareness, but it's not necessarily an involved awareness. So the next piece is the experience. If you have the exposure through experience, you just deepen your ability to know more. And so you go from just hearing and knowing and learning to actually doing. And when you start doing by experience, you usually begin to get more engaged. And so the engagement is really that connecting piece. And so the more you engage and connect, the more you are able to teach, you are able to share, you are able to inform and coordinate and facilitate and do all of those things. So you kind of, again, deepen your own ability within a field, if it's agriculture, for instance, as we're talking about. I have, like I said, I've served on the MALC board for the last 2 years, and through my experiences here in the legislature, have had the opportunity to meet with many FFA leaders. And I was never an FFA person, and as I said in committee, it was for boys when I was in high school, so I wasn't a member of FFA, but I was a 4-H member. And as I was thinking about this over the course of the last year, actually, trying to pull kind of this bill together and thinking about this, I was thinking about 4-H, and, you know, 4-H has a pledge. And we pledge our head to clearer thinking, our heart to greater loyalty, our hands to larger service, and our health to better living. And for our club community, and when I was in 4-H, it was just our country, but now it's the world as well. So, you know, that, again, ages me. But so we had the 4-H pledge. And when I think about that and I think about FFA, it really is about engagement. It is about how do we get to the point where you are involved enough that you have an appreciation for what you're doing, and you begin to experience it in with your head and your heart and your hands, and you're doing it all because it's just it's a larger aspect. And when you do that, you kind of get to that enjoyment piece where you usually have fun and you're meeting new people and you're involved, and you really figure out that, you know what, I like doing this. And as a career counselor, I often talk to students about, you know, finding their own passion, being able to say that you're doing something because it's what you want to do, not what you have to do, but what you want to do, what you enjoy doing. And oftentimes I think about enjoyment as, what would you give up if you could do this again? What would you be willing to give up? So, you know, to think about what actually leads you to that enjoyment piece. We aren't able to necessarily tell students what they're going to enjoy, but if we give them the opportunity to do all of these things, they will start experiencing what they can enjoy and thinking about that. So hopefully that enjoyment factor leads to them considering going into the right field for them. And if it's FFA experience, 4-H experience, if it's ag education that they have the opportunity to have, they may be more likely to go into the field of agriculture. So that's my, that's kind of my preface here. But now I'll go into the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me that little segue first. But I will talk about the bill and be able to describe it a little bit. And I want to just tell you that this is kind of something that I've been thinking about for really the last, when I was able to be the chair of this committee, the Ag Policy Chair. We certainly hear about farm business management. We hear about the lack of ag educators. We hear about the lack of FFA advisors throughout the state. Students aren't hearing enough about ag education themselves. We don't have enough graduates of, through the colleges for ag education. So I'm trying to kind of do a bill that encompasses a lot of different things. And one of the so I'll just first talk about FBM, farm business management. And I know that you know, there are people in the room that are interested in that issue. I'm actually a faculty member at Riverland Community College, and I have we have farm business management faculty. I have fellow faculty at the college who I work with, and I know there's been some discussion about farm business management. How do we make it more sustainable? How do we increase the revenue? How do we do all of these things? I know there's been some discussion about moving them out of MNSCU into the Department of Ag or, you know, doing some things like that. And I'm here to say I like that we have farm business management within our colleges, and I think that it's an appropriate place for them to stay there. But I think we do need to figure out how do we help them to raise some more revenue? How do we help them to become more sustainable? And one way I think that might be possible is to allow them to teach maybe just one class, but to do an ag education class that they could teach that would be available to high school students, PSEO students. I think because it actually is a win-win in a couple of areas. If you are an FBM instructor, you're already an ag educator. So you're already doing that. I know you're doing it one-to-one and you're doing it on the farm, but if you were to take part of your load and say I'm doing 1 3-credit class and I have 30 students, you're already increasing the revenue for your program, for your college. So that's a plus there. So you add the revenue, you help to sustain the program, and you also will help that shortage of ag educators in the state. When we don't have ag education, we may need to have a number of places throughout the state that may not have ag educators, so high school students would have that exposure to ag-related courses. So that's a piece that I think is a little bit unique, but I'm hopeful that there can be some consideration of that. The high school students, FFA is a co-curricular program. So if you don't have ag education in your high school, you're not going to be an FFA member. And for all of those places throughout the state where we don't have ag educators, those students are not getting the same leadership opportunities, the same exposure to agriculture. And if there would be a way for them to have exposure because they'd be taking an online course and be able to then have the ag education and then maybe be able to be involved in FFA, we're going to need FFA advisors. So another aspect of this bill is to actually have regional FFA advisors. And I know that if I would say that to TJ, he'd probably be tearing his hair out thinking, I don't have enough time to do anything more. But if there would be a way to allow current teachers to be able to, who are FFA advisors, maybe to be able to do more regionally. Maybe not everyone would be doing that, but there might be some opportunity. Or you'd have some schools that don't have ag educators, but they could combine their efforts to have an FFA advisor, and that would be a regional FFA advisor who would be able to then meet the needs of those students in the area. And who are then taking an online course. That might be another option for them. It allows for that experience and engagement. And so we're raising the awareness, but we're also encouraging, educating them and getting them to have that experience and engagement. And then, as we know, the ag educators, as we've heard in other bills today, presentations, they work 24/7, 365 days out of the year. I really do believe they do. I talked to the FFA officers that were in my office and asked them about what they appreciated about their ag teachers, and one said, well, when I call him at 11:30 at night, he always answers his phone. And I'm thinking, well, he should be able to sleep sometimes too, but that's good, you know, that those FFA advisors are very, and ag instructors are very involved with their students, and that's just a remarkable attribute that they bring to the table. And if we'd have the opportunity to provide them some additional funding, I'd like to be able to do that for them so that, you know, they do work during the summer, and if they could get some money for that extra time. Certainly, again, serving on MALC, I know that we have a need for ag educators. So we do need to get teachers, licensed teachers, through the system. So there's money in the bill that would help the Southwest Minnesota State University. They're starting their ag education program, and to hopefully bring back the University of Minnesota Crookston ag education program. So working on that. And then it's actually Article 1, but it's the last thing I'm talking about, is the farmland rental. And I appreciate very much that the Agri Fund should be kept whole as much as it is now, and I fought that over the last 2 years. So now I seem like I'm, oh, why are you now taking the money? But so I'm not wedded to where this money is coming from on the rental or the allowing school districts to have access to it. I've been thinking about this before we knew budget forecast and all of those things. So, you know, this might be a possibility, but it seems like it would make sense. And again, we've talked about immigrant farmers. We've talked about urban agriculture. You know, we do need exposure to agriculture throughout the state. So it may be that there's some within inner cities, you know, within any part of the state that you might have a need to expand rental land and the opportunities. So it builds that partnership, and so that's the first or subdivision two there, and also extending the Agri Fund, because you know we need to make sure that we do that too to 2025. So for the most part, I think that's really the impetus behind the bill. It seems maybe like a hodgepodge of things, but it really is. I'm not carrying many bills. I'm carrying this bill. This is my effort, you know, this time to say, hey, you know what? We really do have some problems, but I think we have some solutions that we can come up with too. So I very much appreciate the opportunity today to be able to, you know, share my thoughts on this, and I'm happy to hear other people's consideration and thoughts as well.
Thanks, Representative, for your passion for this bill. And as you were talking, at first, it reminded me of a saying I heard a while back, that if you're lucky enough to find a job you enjoy, you'll never have to work a day in your life. You know, that's a lot of us, I think, in agriculture feel that way. Questions from members on the Poppy bill? Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Poppy, to your question or comment, your opening comment about the financial implication or impact that this bill has, one of the conversations that Chair Anderson and I had, I said, you know, we have these great ideas coming forth, and there's many similarities. I said, if we could hold them over and work on this, similar to, if you remember the Green Acres debate, I think it was, Representative Lemire that was carrying the bill, and we took the testimony initially, we had one day, and then the second day, we all reconvened, but we didn't gavel in. And we just sat around with all the stakeholders, and we worked out language that we all could live with. And then we brought back the next day, and then we moved it out. And, you know, I know we're having similar conversations to where if we can get together and work out what the best language is on this issue to move it, because you're absolutely right, Chair Poppy, that this is an extremely important issue. And so that's kind of the thought process behind it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
More questions from members of the committee. I did have a question, Representative Poppy, on the rental subsidy grant, line 18 on page 1, to expand access to rental land for owners of land. Does that mean that owners of land could access the money to rent more land?
No. I see how that might read that way. No, that wasn't what I was thinking about.
because on line 18 it says expand yeah. access to land or lower the cost to school district, like there are two different options there, mm-hmm. is the way I look at it. So I'm just mm-hmm. asking for a clarification.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that, I'm not sure how, if it, what I'm thinking is that I want the ability to rent the land from the owners.
Okay.
So maybe it needs to be readjusted there.
Okay. So your intent is to allow the subsidies to owners to rent their land to schools
right.
or education.
Right, right. Okay. So it wasn't for the owners to rent more land. It was for like school districts or community, you know, gardens or whatever to be able to rent the land from the owners. So okay. if it needs to be clarified, that
yeah.
it
okay.
needs to be.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody in the audience who would care to comment or testify on House File 1051? Seeing none, any final comments to your bill, Representative Poppe?
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Thank you, Chair Hamilton. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk today about this bill, and I'm hopeful that we do bring forth some solutions that we can all live with and that will actually move us forward in solving some of these problems. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Representative, and House File 1051 is going to be laid over. That concludes our schedule today, except a reminder again, committee, thank you all for being here today on a day that we really weren't scheduled to meet. Glad we had as many folks as we could, and we will be meeting again on Tuesday of next week. We have a lot of bills to get through before the deadline of, I guess we've got a couple of weeks, but so our next meeting will be Tuesday, the 10th of March, next Tuesday, for the Ag Policy Committee. And also then Wednesday of next week as well we'll meet. And just a quick reminder to GOP members, we'll have a huddle at noon in room 400 North, members of the GOP Ag Committee. Pardon? I forgot to call. Anyway, so again, thank you, members, and the meeting is adjourned.